Blog Talk Radio.
Round two of
Steve Fishon. Last Sunday, we had such an awesome show, and we ran over time. And so we decided to have him back because we know everybody loved him. You guys were just hopping out there in the chat room and having such a wonderful time with the story. But before we get to Steve, let me say, you know, that song is the last song that we played last Sunday, actually, and we're going to start a little bit of that story with him in a moment. But I want to let you guys know, normally I just have shows on Sunday, but people have been asking Guvanarama to do more shows, and I don't know what I'm getting myself into, but it sure is a lot of fun. And I want to let you guys know that I'm having back, by popular demand, Sonny Ahuja. I love that name. I remember the first time I had him on the show, I couldn't say his last name. I think I said it like a million times, and then finally, by the middle of the show, I was saying, Ahuja! Pretty good. And I thought, man, I could scream that at a party, and that ought to get everybody going. You know, just to let you guys know who he is, I call him, I always have like these little names for people, you know. What do you think? Don't you think I do that? You know, it kind of helps me kind of figure out who they are. And I call him the Twitter King. This guy, he has over 51,000 followers. And, you know, he's really good at what he does. He's a technology guru. He also, you know, he was just featured in a magazine here in a business journal serving the greater Milwaukee. And he says, reinventing himself, retailer closes stores, uses social media to launch web business. And I think this is what Sonny Ahuja did. He says that 15 years ago, what he, if he knew 15 years ago what he knows now, he thinks he would be a millionaire. Millionaire. Can you believe that? If he knew 15 years ago what he knows today. I have to say that to myself because what did I know 15 years ago? And what I know today, if I knew what I know now 15 years ago, I don't know if I'd be a millionaire. So you guys probably want to know what it is that he knows about the social media and how to I don't want to say manipulate, but I think that we, you know, we do. In a way, we're all trying to get our goods out there. You know, everybody's selling something. Everybody's trying to get the word out about something because you believe in what you do. And living in the world that we live in a free society, this is the American dream, is to become, you know, for some, you know, money isn't everything, but it doesn't hurt. If you become a millionaire and you can give to your children, your family, and leave something for, you know, to make a better world and a better society, I like that versus telling, you know, having the government tell me what to do with my money and, you know, dictating to me all this, you know, good stuff. So you guys want to tune back in tomorrow at 8 o'clock p.m. CST. And let's see what Sonny Ahuja has up his sleeves, because I want to know. And I hope that it doesn't take me 15 years to, you know, make it big. And, well, here we go. Let's see. What do we have? I just want to quickly say, you know, sometimes people have birthdays on Facebook, and I don't get to them all the time, and I feel bad because, you know, I have so many great friends. And there's times I just don't have the time to go back and say happy birthday. But today, Froilan Rodriguez is having a birthday. Jose de Leon is having a birthday. And Luis Magaña is having a birthday. And we want to say to all three of them, have a happy birthday. I hope it was great. I hope it was wonderful. Okay. And with that, let's see. What else? Did we have anything else? We wanted you guys to refer to check out our website, www.guvanarama.com. And, you know, from time to time, we're going to be featuring certain businesses out there. We want you guys to take a look at, we have Blue Light Music Entertainment. They're on Facebook. Check them out. They have a new duo. Duo, that's how you say it in English, duo. It's called We. We stands for Whitney Houston and Elvis Presley. It's a young man and woman who sing awesome pop en español. You guys are going to love them. They're going to be touring Spain pretty soon. We also have Grand Adventure. Check them out. And New Vacuums, they're friends. They're actually friends. All of these people are friends of ours. And we also have a prayer request for our friend Maylene Izquierdo, who is just out of the hospital. She's on the left-hand side with her wedding dress. She just got married not too long ago. I don't even think it's been a month. It's just a beautiful girl having a little bit of a tough time with health. So we hope that you all say your prayers. And, you know, with that, we are going to turn to Steve Pishon. And who is Steve Pishon? For all those of you who are turning in today for the first time, Steve is a wonderful musician, lyric writer, you know, and he's not just a musician. He's someone who really thinks deeply about social and cultural issues, and that's what he writes about. Last Sunday, we had him on the show, and, you know, we listened to quite a bit of his music. Everybody was loving it because it's not just really good stuff, but you know, it's music with a message. And we don't hear, you know, I was thinking about that today. We don't hear a lot of musicians singing music with a message anymore. Do you think, co-host? We don't hear too much of that, too. Not that deep. He says not that deep. And in fact, I was talking to my daughter, who is 10 years old, and I can't remember what I was telling her today. And she said, "Oh, I know. I was singing. I was telling her. I was talking so fast. I was singing. I was telling her about the song Iron Man 9/11." And she looks at me. We're having lunch, and she says, "Man, that Steve is deep." And this is a 10-year-old, and she likes his music already. Some of his influences, you know, you guys probably heard it. I didn't get to mention it last time, but it's Steely Dan, Bob Dylan, Phil Keaggy, I think I'm saying that right, Neil Young, Jars of Clay, which I've never heard, but I may have heard him, but probably don't remember, Lyle Lovett, and he can tell us a few more. I'm not going to talk anymore because I know you guys want to hear him, and he's on the line. Hello, Steven Pishon. You're in the house.
Hi, Marta. How are you tonight?
Pretty good. How are you?
Very good. I like your intro music, by the way. That's a lot of fun. Very nice.
All that Guvanarama?
I love it. It's great. I want a copy of that.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know what? I think I mentioned it in one of my previous shows, the band that did that song. They're really amazing. They're Sugarcane Rush. I'm so glad that you mentioned it because so many times I forget. And, you know, there's so many things that I want to say that sometimes I forget someone. And how can I forget Sugarcane Rush? They're the ones who made that song for me, wrote the lyrics, the music, everything. They were on the show on a Sunday, and I did not have a song for my show. I was actually using a song that was provided by a musician in France. A song that was in French, two songs actually. He gave us two songs in French. One was called Cafetero. By the way, jot this down because I'll put them up on Guvanarama so friends can see it now that I'm mentioning it. I'll put it on the fan page so anybody listening to the show and you want to go to Guvanarama fan page on Facebook, you'll be able to see what I'm talking about. And what was his name? Nico Ariel was his name. And he gave us a song. You're going to love it. He gave us a song called Cafetero, and he gave us a song called, what is that country? Madagascar. And when you guys hear it, you're going to love it. You're going to see and hear the influences of Cuba and Madagascar. The music in Madagascar is very, very ethnic. Well, this young man from France sent us those two songs, and we were very, very happy to use his music until Sugar came along and Sugarcane Rush came along, and they were on the show on a Sunday. By Wednesday, the next Wednesday, they emailed me with a little clip of that song. I was sitting with the laptop on the sofa, and I froze. I literally froze. My heart was beating so hard. I was crying. I stood up. I jumped. I cried. These guys are just amazing. And, you know, you're right. Whenever I hear that song, I think back to that day. And it really gets me in the mood for the show. And, I don't know how they did it, but they really made me, they really captured who I was, I think, because I really enjoy having a good time with people, and I love having people, you know, really think about issues and life, and you're one of those guests who, you know, you're right there with me. You know, your music really, it says a lot. It says a lot about culture, and I think that long after we are all gone and it stays and it lives on, people are going to be able to see through your words and your music what was going on in the times. And you are a heavy duty guy.
So. Well, that's a nice thought, and I sure hope so. It's nice to know that there's some potential for it to live on or represent a part of history, I suppose, at some point as Iron Man, I think, does.
Absolutely. You know, I was listening to the end of that show. I listened to it today several times, and because we were sort of rushing through that part of the show last week or on Sunday, and you know, I mean, I know we were rushing through it, but I did get you. I heard you, but I felt like we were almost tripping on each other a little bit because, you know, it was the end of the show, and then we got some calls, and our lovely Sandy La Loba from Miami, our reggae girl, called in, and my co-host said she ratted me out.
Well, she's very nice.
She's amazing. She really, not only she's amazing, but she knows me. And the funny thing is, she was on the show quite a few months ago. And from time to time, when she's not performing in Miami, she pops in and she listens. And that girl really, she's gotten to know my mind, you know, so well that I was really surprised when she called in and she says, "Well, what's going on, Kumanarama?" and then she tells you, if anybody can find John Lapointe, which you talked about, and this young man, John Lapointe, is the person that you wrote this song about him, Iron Man. Can you remind, you know, give us a little wrap up about that, because, you know, since we kind of brushed through it so quickly on Sunday, I'd like to start with that story and then move on to the other
sure.
song. Tell me a little bit about Iron Man and what moved you to write that song.
Well, the fella's name that I wrote the song about, his name is John Lapointe, and I only know that from having heard a radio interview. Our local AM station in the morning is very popular. It's WJR Radio. And on one of the anniversaries, I don't honestly remember which one. I want to say it might have been 2005 or 6, 4 or 5. I'm not really sure. But anyway, I heard him interviewed, and I have heard him a couple of times. John Lapointe essentially is an iron worker, and he belongs to, or did at one time, belongs to one of the local iron workers unions here in the Detroit area. Mm-hmm. And when 9/11 hit, the original 9/11, he was working somewhere, I believe, in the Pennsylvania area. And like many of us, he was glued to television watching all of these events unfold.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very moved, of course. He was not only moved, but probably angered and scared and, you know, a lot of mixed emotions. And mm-hmm. he was moved, though, to decide that he would just get up and head to New York promptly. I mean, he literally just about did it as soon as he thought of it, as I understand. And he got in his vehicle, headed straight for Ground Zero, and volunteered to do what he could with his expertise as an iron worker to help among the many volunteers, I'm sure, tear down the steel structures of the Twin Towers. And I understand he worked there for about 3 weeks doing that. And he had a very engaging and interesting interview with the host that day. And that's pretty much where most of the lyrics, I extracted most of his words to come up with the lyrics that you've heard on that song.
Wow. And so when you heard him, when you heard the story, that must have really moved you. I mean, why? Because there were so many people that went to New York City to help. Why? why this iron worker, why was his story so moving to you?
Well, it jumped out to me, Marta, right away that they were talking to a guy who was an iron worker, and, you know, you think of iron right away. In that sense, you think
mm-hmm.
of strong, rugged, you know,
mm-hmm.
all the, I suppose, masculine type of definitives that you can come up with that, to me, must have personified this particular individual. And then think about what he was about to face and bring that into the context of one's very soul and being, and how this, quote, iron worker would face this, and, you know, how he would actually be able to deal with all the mixed emotions,
mm-hmm.
even though he's this rugged individual. He was about to see some things, and he did see some things that none of us have ever seen except watching it over the television, and not only see it, but smell it and be in the
mm-hmm.
midst of the dust and just really be right in that. And so at the very end of the song, as I kind of go through the many emotions that I imagine that he goes through, at the very end of the song, I make a point of bringing to light that an Iron Man, though he may be, was he strong enough in his heart and his soul to really face that, you know, to really face up to that and survive it mentally? I suppose much like one might experience if you're in a wartime setting, a soldier,
mm-hmm.
military
mm-hmm.
people. I would say that there's probably some strong similarities between those experiences in that respect.
So when you saw the interview, did he was this like during the time that he was on Ground Zero, or did you see the interview after he was out of Ground Zero?
No, the host must have discovered him sometime after the fact, because I believe that he has been interviewed a couple, three times, and I've tried to locate him without success.
Mm-hmm.
But no, this would have probably been 2 or 3 years after, and it just. He's such a wonderful person to hear because
mm-hmm.
his story really drives home the very horror of what happened on that day in a very poignant way that I think is easily overlooked as we get further and further from it.
Right. Well, when I listened to that at the end of the show last Sunday, I realized that you know, I was actually able to picture exactly what I think you must have pictured, you know, with the strength and then, you know, you're right. Would his heart be able to withstand? And so the song is really poignant to that time, because it's a point in life, I think, that all of us, not only Americans, but I think people all over the world, because they look to America as the, you know, place of opportunity, the land of dreams, and where everything beautiful and wonderful can happen. As I was saying before, you can become a millionaire sometimes overnight if you use your brain. And so it just really depends. And for something so horrible and so horrendous to happen on 9/11, you know, and then not only the hatred, because we see the worst of mankind, but then at the same time we saw the best of mankind, and, you know, the whole country just sort of stood still. I remember I was nursing my daughter in bed when I got a call from a girlfriend, and she called to tell me about what had happened, and I felt like I was in a dream. I got up out of bed, and she said, you know, turn on the television. Did you see what happened? A plane just hit the Twin Towers. And I thought it was an accident at first, and then she's still talking to me. And, you know, I couldn't believe it. Then I sat there, and I think that the second one hit, and I started to feel like my world was, you know, being taken out from under me. I felt so unprotected. I felt like anything could happen. Like I could blow up at any moment. It was really scary. I just didn't know. I didn't feel safe. And I thought, if I didn't feel safe in the United States, where can you feel safe? I was scared, and I think everybody felt that fear. You know, for someone to actually get in their car and say, I'm going to go right where that happened and I'm going to help, I think, you know, it took a lot of guts, I think, for anybody, you know, because it isn't just a disaster like the tsunami, what I was talking about last Sunday. It wasn't just like a tsunami. This was an actual terrorist attack against mankind. So you had no idea whether it could happen again or there would be more, you know, more anything happening. So what a song. And so I hope that when people listen to the song, they take your words and they realize, you know, that out of something horrendous and out of all that hatred, there can be manifestations of love and humanity in people's hearts, and that something wonderful can come of it, and people can pull together. And I think that's what you really brought about is, you know, how people do that.
Mm-hmm.
So what a heavy, and you know, we are trying to locate John. I'm sure you know. I mean, after Loba ratted me out, we were trying to locate him right then and there as I was talking to you. She's pretty amazing. We actually, you know, I have not been able to locate him. I have not been successful, and so today I called a good friend, someone who has been on the show before, the guest that did the show with me, You Only Live Twice, Gumercindo Bidot, the writer of the book You Only Live Twice. He's also a private investigator, and as a favor to us on the show, he's trying to locate him as well. So, you know, as soon as we hear something, he's in the chat room, actually, Sindo. He's in the chat room with us right now.
Oh, great.
So thank you, Gumercindo, for doing. He's been on it all day today asking me questions, and we've been back and forth. So, you know, we hope that we find him. And when we do, you're more than welcome to come back on the show, and I'll have to have him on the show as well, and maybe he can give us, you know, give us an account of what happened there on 9/11, and, you know, what took place and what kinds of things did he see. And, you know, what a story that would be to have him come and talk to us about, and have you as well.
Oh, yeah, I would love to finally meet up with him. That would be certainly one dream I would enjoy seeing come to fruition.
Okay.
So that would be great.
Well, we'll do our best over here, that's for sure. And, you know, this show is out there. I think I also put his name as a tag on the show. So if anybody, I think that when people do searches and stuff, it'll be more likely for this show to come up, and maybe somebody will hear what's going on, and they will, you know, direct them to our emails and phone numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Great.
Oh, goodness. Well, with that in mind, let's see. You also have music about Detroit, leaving Detroit paralyzed. Tell us, what is this song about, leaving Detroit?
Well,
paralyzed.
First of all, the song Paralyzed is a part of a project, an EP, five songs on that particular CD, that basically all tell one story. And as if you don't know already, that's about all I write, is when I write something, there's going to be something to talk about in a story sense.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, leaving Detroit is kind of taking a distant view of one individual, and actually at the end of the CD I have a song called Fictitious Bob. And so I made this guy up, but he certainly fits the profile of what many Michiganders and Detroiters have gone through in the past few years with the auto industry. So Paralyzed, being the very first track of that, though, visits Bob, if you will, and we get an image of Bob standing at the former plant, auto plant that he used to work at, and I've kind of put him there looking through the window and peering into this factory, regretting the fact that his job has come to an end and all that will follow. He's going to have to leave his home. That's covered in another song, and he's going to have to relocate to North Carolina where he's found additional work, et cetera. But paralyzed also is a very strong political statement. And rather than give all that away, I'd rather, if you don't mind, Marta, let me just leave it there. This is auto worker who's lost his job. He's feeling sad about it. He's visiting that plant for one last time before he finally leaves the area completely. And there's a lot of political inferences in the song that I hope that your listeners will get or interpret for themselves.
That's wonderful. And I actually know or used to know some people who were in Minnesota because, you know, the Ford company was here in St. Paul. And there was a lot of people who lost their jobs there as well, and a lot of closings towns nearby of dealerships that were ordered to close. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people who are suffering, not only with the with real estate, you know, the issues that we had with real estate, but also the auto industry has really brought our country to sort of a halt. 9/11 was sort of like I don't know if that was really the beginning of it all. I think it was already kind of moving in a down spiral direction, but this has really hurt us as well. Paralyzed.
Well, without the auto industry, Detroit has nothing, and I mean, it certainly has for many, many years, certainly improving in that respect, but just leave you with one quick little tidbit before you move on to the song, but I heard it put this way, that before they closed the dealerships here, if you were to drive from downtown Detroit and go out one of our main streets, which would be Grand River, and you were to just pay attention to all the car dealerships that you would see along the way, it was estimated that one out of every three that you came across was closed as a result of that particular change. One out of three. Many independent family businesses. I'm a family business owner, by the way, and many family businesses were absolutely destroyed over that decision, and it's even been, I'm sure you've heard, it's even been debated whether or not what had happened then was even a necessary thing. So
that's right.
Sad here.
That's right. It's sad. So many decisions, and sometimes it's difficult to figure out, what's going to happen after they're made. But now the decisions were made, and this is what happened. And so some people are and have become paralyzed.
Let's try to engage the listeners on their response. I'd be very interested in hearing a little feedback after they hear the lyrical content here.
Okay, absolutely. And they're out there in the chat room. And if you want to call the show, it is 1-347-843-4717. Give us a call and give us your feedback. We'll be right back. Paralyzed.
Looking through a padlocked door, I won't be coming here no more. The same instead of shore to shore, got us paralyzed. Won't be standing. Where the sun won't shine, got us paralyzed. much there is getting done. A cigarette and coffee cold, with them we bide our time. Grab the wheel and drive away. Make nothing of the sweat you gave. Just in time a new man saves all those he paralyzed.
You know, it's a beautiful song. I hear Steely Dan, and I hear Bob Dylan. I hear a little bit about, Bob or Neil Young. I hear the influence in your music, but man, the message is deep. And we're looking at Caroline in the chat room saying, "You are ripping my guts out, Steve."
I saw that. Sorry, Caroline. I've already said that.
Ouch.
I hope it's somewhat uplifting, at least musically.
You know, it is. I think that it's okay, you know, to listen to music that says, you know, it's my life, it's now or never.
Right.
And, you know, run through the streets and, you know, but there are times that you really, you know, sometimes you say, you know, what is life all about? And if you're not really talking about something that has substance, something that is deep and has meaning, then you're not really talking about anything. It's everything is superficial. So
I mean, I love a lot of music and different artists. For me as a writer, Marta, I just have come to the point where in my writing, if there isn't something there poetically and deep in the lyrics, I just don't do it. I don't enjoy it. For me, there's something, I don't know why, that's what I'm driven to do. I love to really convey a message that I think will touch others, that has some depth to it, and certainly depth to me.
I think it's because you're a thoughtful person and you have something that you want to say. Just, you know, for some people, they sing about love and that's what's on their mind. And I think that as people mature, and then others, the younger ones, they sing about drinking and sex and, you know, whatever's in their mind, you know.
Right.
And I think as people mature, or sometimes you don't have to necessarily mature. Sometimes you could be a young person and just have a mature mind. And then that's it. You're going to convey in your writing. That's one thing that I have learned doing these interviews. I never realized that about musicians, that you know, us, the people that listen to music, I didn't know that this is what they're about, that they sing the things that they're passionate about. I used to just listen to music for the sake of listening, and now when I listen to it, I think it tells me something about the artist. It tells me something about the person who wrote the song. And so now when I listen to it, I'm attracted to those people who sing things that I am passionate about, you know. And these are deep subjects that you have chosen. And you do it. You know what I like about your style of music? It's not angry. You know, it isn't like an angry rock and roll that you're singing about being paralyzed. Because it could sound like very angry and it could be very, you know, negative, but you say your music doesn't come across that way. Your music, even though you're singing about all these deep personal and cultural issues, it doesn't really trigger a anxiety. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it kind of makes you lay back and kind of take it in and saying, yeah, this is what's happening, but it relaxes you. It isn't something that's going to make you upset.
Right. Well, I certainly that's certainly my goal when I write, or other than obviously satisfying myself with that kind of writing, which is what I wish to do, but I certainly want to engage people, and that's what's really so nice about your show and this opportunity, is have the opportunity to actually engage people with the lyrical content and hopefully touch them and start off a conversation.
Absolutely, and we have Cindy saying, great song, great message, and you're right about a little bit of Dylan and Bobby V and others, great voice. There's our private PI in the chat room talking about your music, and earlier he said that we will find John. I saw that going by. He says, we will find John, so I hope that we do, and I think that John would be so pleased and honored to have a song after him, or triggered by, influenced by him. Also, we have, I think that was terrific. Caroline says, terrific, outstanding. True pain for the pain of others. True pain for, am I reading that right, Caroline? He says, hey, that's poetic emotion, true pain for the pain of others. Your art is outstanding. And it really is, because sometimes, you know, you can put down in on paper some of these feelings and they don't come across, or you can't engage people, you know. It just depends how you do it, and you do it so well. Were you always a writer? I mean, how did you become such a I'm always amazed when men, and I don't mean to say it like, you know, why does Cubanarama pick on guys? Because, so many ladies tell me guys can't express themselves. They don't say things they feel. But every time I talk to a musician, they do. It's like, well, ladies, guess what? You got to marry a musician.
Well, that's not, they don't call them starving artists for nothing.
So what are you saying? They just talk, talk, talk?
Well, it's, you know, if you're a musician, you better have another job.
You know, and a lot of them do, actually. A lot of them do. And the sad thing is that some of the musicians that I've come to know, they're so amazing. I feel like they really should just do that full time, because they really have their heart. That's where they have their heart, is in music, but it is difficult to make it in the music industry. So they do have to have another, you know, for the time being, until they, you know, they get their music out. But were you always a good writer, a good communicator like this? How did you become so aware of what is going on in the world and that you're able to express it the way that you do?
Well, first of all, I always loved writing. And I certainly remember my writing interest beginning when I was very young, 7, 8 years old, and poems and things like that I wrote, and I still have retained all these years that I had awards for and things. And so, yes, it was certainly something I believe was in me at a very young age. And I picked up a guitar and started playing that when I was probably about 10. And I'm sure I wrote my first song within the first year, and I've just been writing ever since. I've written, I don't even know, I mean, hundreds of songs, many that end up,
wow,
in the round file, I'm sure, but just hundreds and hundreds of songs, and I to this day I still continued. I just finished one the other day for another documentary, which I told you about, for Keith Famey and the Vietnam Vets upcoming tribute in Detroit here in January. So I'm working on yet another piece for that. And you know, sometimes at a rapid pace and sometimes not so, but there's always something in the hopper, if you will, and always something that grabs my attention, and I'll jot it down and say, gee, I want to write a song about that. Iron Man was much that way, by the way. I know that I a number of times I had written or wrote myself a note about John LaPointe and wanting to write a story about him, and ultimately I did. So, you know, it's yes, it's something that's always been a part of who I am.
And when you write, do you write the music first? Do you write the lyrics, and then, or how do you do? What is the process? What do you do?
I generally have an idea of the song theme, and then once I have a theme, I almost always will start with a refrain. Paralyzed. You know, the motor won't run. That's the refrain part of the song. So oftentimes I'll start writing that particular repetitive theme or repetitive refrain. And then from that, I start to construct the verses or the bridge, whatever it is I'm working on around that. And I just I keep playing around with the words until I say them in ways that I think is unique and not something that you'll hear in just any song. And I know that that's, I mean, they're just words, but I like to say them in ways that will catch people's interest. I noticed when I was, and I had forgotten about it, but probably something that maybe some of your listeners caught on to when you were playing Paralyzed, but there's a line in there that says, how long will the willow run? And the local people here would get it because willow run is a plant here. It happens to be one of the auto plants that's barely hanging on by a thread, as I understand. But just different things like that. I like to have fun with it, too. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. When I go through, I want to say, gee, I've got this line, and it sounds somewhat typical. How can I say it a different way to make it more creative and more interesting, more fun? So that's kind of the process.
You really do make you make people think. And, you know, sometimes you have to listen to the songs over and over and over to really kind of comprehend, because they're really filled with a lot of meaning. Take it all is about leaving Detroit. This is when the fictitious Bob, and we have a Bob in the chat room. I love to harass Bob. Hey, Bob. this one is about the auto worker again when he picks up and
you're a song ahead actually in terms of theme. That what you're referring to, Marta, is Leaving Detroit, but Take It All is actually about the bank coming along and starting to repossess or take all of the possessions that Bob has that the bank holds as well. So he's losing his home and his vehicle and a number of things in this song. So Take It All, really, the opening of this song is specifically with regard to his home.
Okay. And now I just want to make this clear. Leaving Detroit is the name of the CD?
And it is track number 3 as well.
And it's track number 3. How many songs are in Leaving Detroit?
There's 5.
5, okay. And so Take It All is the song number 2. Paralyzed is the one that we just heard, and we're going to play Take It All now. And we'll be right back, and we'll continue to talk with Steve, and we'll see what else he has to tell us about Leaving Detroit and about the Taking It All and about Bob. See, that's what happens when Cubana Rama tries to read what's in the chat, too. not fair. We will be right back.
Go ahead and take it all, like the neighbor down the street. He used to fill a coffee can, it helped to make ends meet. Put a sign out on the lawn, gotta be a year or two. I've been watching out my door, been looking out for you. much there you'll see. I have no money in the bank, no pride or dignity. I used to have a place to go, the morning time to rise. I see the empty parking lot, the dirty paper flies. Now you've come to claim it all, sell it on the cheap. What the hell did I expect you? Take the front door key. A part of me no longer.
That is heavy. I was writing in the chat room here how I drove through our neighborhood here in Minnesota. This was about a little bit over a year ago. A friend of mine was looking for a home to buy, and I was shocked when we drove into this neighborhood that was fairly a new neighborhood, probably within the last 5 years. There was nothing in this area, and they had constructed these beautiful homes that were, at the time, they were being sold for almost $500,000. And, you know, anywhere from $250,000 to $500,000, depending on how many rooms and bathrooms. Some of them were a little smaller than others. But they were in a really, you know, beautiful area, up-and-coming neighborhoods, brand-new malls, and, you know, everything was happening so fast in these areas in Minnesota, a little bit more rural than where we live, probably about a half an hour further into the country, which is, you know, still not bad for people who want to drive a half an hour away and get away from everything. And maybe some of them could have, you know, depending on where you were, you could buy a little hobby farm. If you had a little bit over $1 million, you could have something like that, have a couple of horses, and voila, you know, you want to go see a movie, drive a half an hour. You want to go and see people, you're not far away, you know. And these neighborhoods were, they looked like a ghost town, and it broke my heart. And my friend and I walked into quite a few of these homes, and you could see, you know, I don't know if, you know, I'm saying you could see. There was nobody there. I could feel the sadness of when these people left. I don't know, you know, why, if it was just that I was walking into a neighborhood that was every single home after home after home. There was nothing. There was no one. There was no curtains. There was nothing. You could see right through the windows, and it was wintertime. There was snow on the ground. It was cold, and as we walked into all these places, I couldn't help to think, where are these people? Where did they go? And who are their, the children's friends? Because every single family had a life. And, you know, I imagine the kids, you know, we were going through the living room and the fireplaces and where the little girl's bedroom, and you could still see the colors on the wall, and it was very disturbing. And so when I hear this song, it's giving me some feedback. It's when I hear this song, Take It All, I feel the sadness, even though it wasn't, you know, necessarily due to the auto industry, but it happened to so many people. So this fictitious Bob, you followed him from being paralyzed to having to leave. Why did you choose Bob and followed him all the way, you know, from being paralyzed to going? And why did you choose this, the subject?
The subject or the character?
Or the character, both.
Well, the character I chose because after all that heaviness, fictitious Bob sounded rather funny. So I wanted to lighten it up with the last track. So I'd encourage everybody to go to my website and listen to Fictitious Bob. It's just me and my guitar talking about Fictitious Bob and, you know, kind of relating Bob to my own experience in a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek way. So
uh-huh.
You know, I had to get light somewhere, and so that's where I got light with the project. It's the whole thing's heavy enough as it is when you live in the Detroit economy. But as why did I do the project? I guess because we were just, you know, we were in the midst of all this here. I mean, you can't live in the Detroit area and not be affected by the auto industry in some way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you work within it or not, it's going to affect you. It's been such a mainstay and part of our existence here in Detroit that, you know, I would equate it a little bit to years ago when the steel mills in Pennsylvania, I can't come up with the name of the town, Allentown, and, of course, Billy Joel sings about, and other towns that just were ghost towns overnight. And, of course, they
mm-hmm.
became that way because they were so dependent on one way of living, you know, one way of making a living. And Detroit, although we're not quite that singular, we're more diverse than that, but we still – and we're getting better, by the way. But we certainly have relied heavily on the auto industry for so long that we've got a long way to go before we can finally turn that around and start to bring other industries and other type businesses that will actually support our, you know, our people here and our economy.
And, you know, I'm reading here in the chat room, we have Gumercindo says, Steve is a visionary that speaks our pain. You have a new fan. He says, going to search for John.
Actually, for John. Oh, John, thank you. I thought he meant Bob, but okay, yeah, I'm glad.
Well, Bob, we know he's fictitious.
Yeah, that's right. He won't find him. Good point, though.
We know
good.
Bob. Bob is right there in the chat room harassing everybody.
that's
kidding. We love to harass him. And by the way, I just want to say hello to Ricardo Sosa, who's probably listening and hiding. I love to pick on him. He emailed me personally and says, I hope I didn't insult anybody in the chat room last week. Everybody that comes to the show, they know that they can express their feelings, they can express what their thoughts, and I'm never going to put them down because I think everybody's ideas and opinions are valid. We all have differences of opinion, and that's what America is all about. So I love when people come to the show and they talk in the chat room, and they do it with respect. So there's absolutely nothing to be upset about. I welcome everybody to and everyone to come and to do that. We love it. That's what a radio show should do and ought to do, not just have only one thought. So if you're listening out there, Ricardo, show up your face. Do not just be a guest. You can come in now. Oh, that's amazing. And by the way, we would know if you're there because we have our ways. No, just kidding. We have, you know, we have Gumercindo who's a PI and he's hiding and you never know. He might find you. So we have the CD is called Leaving Detroit, and there's 5 songs. You guys ought to, you know, if people are interested in getting your music, is it a hard copy that you have, or is it through Amazon?
It is hard copy. You can go to cdbaby.com, okay. Punch in my name, and that'll come up along with Am I Here Already? That was the first project. In my many years of writing, though, these two CDs came out together fairly close to each other. And they are the only professional recordings that I've invested in, but I'm doing more at this time. And just elaborate on that a little bit too. Most of everything that you hear is my own playing. I have my own recording studio, and after I do my recordings here, I get together with some of the professional studios here for further mixing or bringing other talent in to add into the project. And I have a drummer that I work with who's out in California, and he does my drumming for me. And then I have a mastering guy who's out in San Francisco, and he does that. So I kind of piece it all together. I start here and then expand it with others outstate or in-state, whichever.
That's great. Do you ever produce other musicians' music as well?
I have. I did one young lady a number of years ago, and Shayna was her first name, but I completed her whole project for her. She was very good, very talented, and wrote her own music. Dunlap, Shayna Dunlap. Look that up on CD Baby, by the way. Everything was done here, and she's quite a talent in her own right.
Awesome. Do you want to, you can put it, maybe put her name, the correct spelling there.
Drop
on
that
the,
here, sure.
Yeah, that would be great so our friends can find her. And then, so we have the last song of the CD that we have is Leaving Detroit, and that is the name of the CD, Leaving Detroit. Is that the CD, is that the one that has the wheel, the tires on the cover?
Mm-hmm. That is. Yep. It's a flat tire, by the way, if you look closely. It's a
flat
tire in an empty parking lot.
You know what? Very thoughtful. I did see that. In fact, we have that right, you know, on Blog Talk Radio, we're able to plug up. There he goes. Plug in. Sorry. You know, trying to convert these languages that my co-host is always picking on me for saying plug up. He goes, he always tells me, that doesn't sound right.
Well, you actually, Marty, you had it right, though, because the tire needed to be plugged up.
Thank you. See, I knew I was right.
That's right.
You're right. But we're able to link is the maybe the correct word. We're able to link the music with the artist. If you ever sell your music through Amazon, we're able to link it right through Blog Talk Radio. So if you're on blogtalkradio.com and you're listening to the show right there, this second show, part two, has some of the songs. It may not have, maybe they did not have the complete CD, but if you want to have the complete CD, look it up on Amazon or CD Baby. In any event, the show number one has the other music that we featured on show number one. We might play a couple of them before we go tonight because I think that we're going to have time anyway. But for now, we're going to go ahead and play Leaving Detroit, and we'll be right back.
Any kind of way. lead us to the turnpike, and on our search to find a better way. Didn't want to leave Detroit this way. Keep it slow, the Smoky Cat is radar. Raising money for the state he's in. Drive it straight until you see the exit. Change your accent, won't know where you've been. Stay a while, soon you'll be fitting in.
Song, really good. I love it. So you think that a lot of people went and headed towards North Carolina from Detroit?
No. I made all this up.
I was going to say, what's happening in North Carolina? Because I thought it was only Miami.
I thought if I were Bob and I was having to leave my home, where would I want to go? I thought, well, North Carolina sounds good. So,
it does. I almost believe you.
Yeah, no, that's why it's called Fictitious Bob. So, yeah. But, that was the whole point, is just to create this fictitious guy and, send him somewhere nice. And actually, I will direct your listeners and people in the room there, too, to this. That number four is called Report from Raleigh. And Raleigh, North Carolina, is where Bob and his wife and children end up. And there's
uh-huh.
actually quite a bit of humor there, because now all of a sudden they have to be fans of the what's the name of the football team down there? Everybody's crazy here about University of Michigan and Michigan State now, and we're always crazy about either of those teams. But I can't think of the name of our rivals down there in North Carolina right now. I ought to be able to. But in any case, Bob finds himself down there having to now be fans of another team, and he adapts, he gets used to it, and he misses his Michigan Wolverines, but he survives.
Oh, that is so cool. You know, somebody ought to write a story. I mean, besides the music, like I could see a stage story about this guy Bob. I have to say thank you to Jose Reyes, who put you and I in contact with each other before I forget, because I was going to say thank you at the beginning of the show, and I should probably say it at the end of the show again. and sent him a thank you note. I don't know. He sends me the best people all the time. He's an amazing friend from New York City. Did you know that he sent you to me?
Yes, I did, and I owe him my gratitude as well. He has actually my latest music video, March of a Progressive. He has that on his Cubanology website.
Okay.
He's had it there for quite some time.
He's an amazing blogologist.
Yeah, he sure is. He's got a wonderful site.
He really does. Can you say the site again? We should put that one up on
ours. I can't see the chat room any longer. I don't know why, but Cubanology, Cubanology, Cubanology.com.
Okay. Did you leave the we put it up there? Did you leave the chat room? Do we see?
No,
you?
For some reason I can't. I can't get back in. I'm trying, but for some reason it's not showing right now. So,
if you want to try to go over to my wall, close it up completely, and then go back to my wall on Facebook, and then you can try to enter again that way and see if you can come in.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Okay, I'll try that while we speak. Yeah.
Yeah, sometimes that happens. I don't know why, but sometimes it happens to some friends, and we just tell them to go ahead and close everything, refresh, and come back in. I was going to ask you, because you mentioned the March of the Progressive, and you actually get picked, or how do you get picked to have your music featured in documentaries? Because you have a couple of documentaries that you're in, and they're amazing. How do you do this? That's
well,
wonderful.
You know, they didn't as much pick me as I picked them. and then I approached both Augustin Lazquez, who obviously has the release of the Shea Other Side of the Icon this weekend down at Miami-Dade College. I approached Barbara Rangel and others about my song, and then ultimately through them, Augustin found me and had heard the song, and so we got to talking, and ultimately he decided that he would like to use my song, You Don't Know Shea, which you played last time. He wanted to include that in his release, The Other Side of an Icon. And then one thing led to another. He's a terrific, very, very imaginative, creative guy when it comes to his post-video work. And so he did all the post-production video work that you can find on YouTube or on my website. And once that was done and we put that together with You Don't Know Shea and all his imagery with it, it came out so well that he decided that he's using it in the end. At the very end of the documentary, so the entire video, music video production is there, and we'll be seen with it. So we're going down to watch it. It'll be fun.
That is wonderful. Did you know that Agustin Blasquez actually came over to our website and he left a little comment last week?
I did take note of that. I know he's down in Florida on a number of radio stations and been interviewed about his documentary, so he's been down there for a number of days, and he's getting ready for the big event for him. This will be a very big deal, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
That is wonderful. And for some of you who are listening right now, it says this is Agustin Blasquez, the producer of this documentary, says Steve is great at applying his musical talents to communicate important issues. I am grateful for the tie-in of his You Don't Know Shea to my documentary, Shea, The Other Side of the Icon, of an Icon. It will be great to finally meet my distant collaborator in Miami this week. So you have never met him face-to-face?
Never. And in fact, I told him, and he has a very good friend, Joms, J-A-U-M-S. I email and talk with them fairly often. It's kind of funny, but because they've been working with the music video for so long, they know me rather intimately because my, you know, my face is in the video all the time, and I've never met either one of them. So I won't look too unfamiliar to them, but it'll be interesting for me to get to see them and meet them for the first time. They're a couple of terrific guys, and just really looking forward to it. I've been working with them for quite a while now, and I think we're going to have a nice time together.
And, you know, this is what's so amazing about technology, how wonderful it is that a few years ago, you know, and even when I was growing up as a teenager, we just take all these things that are happening so quickly for granted. We're able to text. We're able to, you know, have a phone and be in the car and, you know, like we were doing the show. For the first time, we were not able to go to our daughter's soccer game because I booked the show. And then they told us she, you know, had a game. So I got my oldest son, took her to the game today, and she was texting us, telling us what the score was as we were doing the show. So I just had to sit back and laugh. We're listening to one of your songs, and my co-host says, you know, it's 1-1. And I'm like, all right, you know, this is crazy. You know, we could be everywhere. And we can see faces, you know, like I can see your face. I cannot imagine what it's like to actually go out and next month we actually have a musician that we interviewed, Corey Kohler, who is going to be performing in Chanhassen, Minnesota, not too far from where we live, and we're going to go see him. That's going to be really, really cool. So I kind of have a little bit of that, the feeling of what it's going to be like for you. But, you know, I don't have anything invested in like you do. I mean, you have your music and there's going to be the documentary. And so for you to actually meet Barbara Rangel, which you haven't met her either, have you?
No, I've talked with her on the phone a number of times. We email back and forth. As you know, much of my You Don't Know Shea song is about her and her mom and her grandfather. So, I really am looking very forward to meeting Barbara along with everybody else.
That's awesome. And for those of you who did not hear the show last on Sunday, the story of Barbara Rangel is you know, that her grandfather was one of the very first people to be executed right there on television in Cuba, and the orders were given by Che Guevara, which a lot of Americans wear his T-shirt, or they wear the T-shirt with his his face on it with the little hat, the black hat, and you know, including Santana. Has been to, you were mentioning last week on Sunday that he had been to the Music Awards, was it not?
Mm-hmm. It's the Grammys with a picture with Che Guevara, a very large image of Che Guevara on his shirt. It's sad to see, actually.
Yeah, and you know, the funny thing is that Che Guevara did not believe in a free society. He did not believe, he hated American music. He did not, they say that Castro is tough, but they say Che Guevara was worse. So I can't imagine anything worse than Castro, really. And this guy was just a cold-blooded murderer. And so this is why you guys are doing. I'm so glad that you have made a song about this. You Don't Know Shea, because I really, you know, this is. I have something to confess, and you're going to. It's you can use it if you want to. This is to show you how much we don't know Shea. A few years ago, I was in Uptown Minneapolis, and I was I checked out this one store, and I saw a T-shirt with Che Guevara on it, and I bought it. Bought it, and I thought that Che Guevara was, because he was no longer alive, I thought he was like Camilo. There was another guy that fought along with Castro. His name was Camilo Cienfuegos, and there's a few people that fought with Castro, but they were not communists, and they were not socialists, and they were not, you know, this hardcore, you know, black entity type of individuals. And I thought that Che Guevara was one of them. I thought that maybe he was one of the good guys. And then I come to find out, when I brought it home, I come to find out that he was, you know, this is long after my father is gone, and I didn't have, you know, I didn't have those conversations, you know, prior to his death. And, you know, for some reason, how could I not know? But this goes to show you how I left Cuba for that very reason, for, you know, trying to get away from communism, and became an exile in America, and a refugee, a political refugee, and legal, though my family, you know, sponsored us, and we came here. We didn't, you know, swim across the ocean like some people think. It's kind of funny how they ask me if I, you know, because I don't even know how to swim, but just to make that clear. And it's not funny. My co-host is laughing, but I get asked that all the time. Did you swim over here? No, I don't. I don't know how to swim, you know. But I bought this T-shirt, and the first time I wore it, I thought it was, you know, like I was wearing something that was, I didn't even think of it as this guy was worse than Castro. When I found out, and then I'm doing the show, and I'm thinking, oh, these people buying this T-shirt, and I thought, I was suckered into it myself.
Yeah.
So that shows
a lot of people are certainly unaware. We know that now, and I think Barbara and Augustine both have done a great job of revealing that's true. We live in the incredible ignorance of essentially a mass murderer. It would be like asking somebody here if they happen to know who Charlie Manson is. You know, of course you do, or Hitler, or whomever. I mean, Che Guevara was just absolutely a horrible murderer just like the others, and yet he's managed to work his way into pop culture in a very positive way.
Why do you think Americans adore his persona? Why do you think that they hold him up as a hero? Because I've looked up some stuff on YouTube and different sites, and they really don't tell the truth about him. Why do you think that is?
I think it's just the kind of sound bites and the, you know, the imagery of him. As we said on the last show, he looks like a rebel, you know, like a freedom fighter. That's how he comes across to people who really don't know Che. They simply, yeah, Caroline just said uninformed, and that's right. They're incredibly uninformed, and so they're brought in by this image of a good-looking guy, or at least by some people's estimation, I suppose. And not only that, like we said last week too, Marta, Robert Redford glorified him in the movie Motorcycle Diaries, which was a terrific movie, but unfortunately it only told a very small part of Che Guevara and his youth, and then at the end he actually, I believe the conclusion of that movie says something about, in a text form, it says something about ultimately Che Guevara died at the hands of some Bolivians or in Bolivia, but that somehow the CIA was involved. That's just about all it said. Well, when you read something like that, that little tidbit, you know, that little soundbite that somebody throws out there, and if you don't really try to become informed about what really happened and you accept what was stated at face value, then you end up thinking that, yeah, our especially those who don't like our country, will come to believe that our devious CIA targeted Che Guevara, this wonderful freedom fighter, and had him murdered because it was politically expedient to do so. Nothing could be further from the truth, but, you know, he definitely fits the mold that a lot of young people like, of a rebel, you know, freedom fighter. He's different. He's certainly kind of anti-establishment, which most youth are to some degree. I certainly was when I was younger, but this is an extreme version of anti-establishment.
Right. It's pretty amazing that I myself didn't even know, and I grew up in that country. But you know, Castro does control the media pretty good. Sometimes I never believed that America controlled the media, and even though I went to college and studied journalism, and because we like to believe that we are in a free society and a free country, but boy, they. I used to argue with my professors that I can believe what I want and nothing is, you know, nobody can manipulate me into thinking this way or that way, and I see the errors of my way the longer that I live, and I certainly see how things are manipulated in the media, and why people don't sometimes they don't believe it, though, even though you tell them the truth, sometimes they don't believe it. They prefer to believe people in the media who don't know and haven't lived through anything. They're just reading, like you say, sound bites, and versus believing someone like myself who was in the country. Even though I was uninformed about some things, there are some things that I actually lived through and experienced. We see in America some things taking place today in our day and age that we thought would never happen.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think I'm going to go to this song, Voters Lament, and then when we come back, you can maybe explain what that song means.
Okay.
Okay, we'll be right back. Voters Lament.
Time is gone. Once again, we gotta see them run. Riding a bus from state to state. Drivers, step it up. You know they cannot be late. The people impatiently wait. Tell me no lies. Tell me the truth. Tell me the things I can expect out of you. Oh, if I cast my vote. If I take the time, will you do me proud if I just stand in the line? Like a rock star at the podium. People cheer them on, run Rudy, run. You're the one who can do the turn around. Before you hit the road, promise you won't let us down. The folks on this small Midwest town, tell us what is and what it will be. Don't make it up, that's something we don't need. Out on a limb, take just one chance. Don't mess it up. Oh, we'll have to end this romance, end this dance, and there won't be a second chance. Give it all that you can. But tell me no lies, tell me the truth, tell me the things I can expect out of you. If I cast my vote, if I take the time, will you do me proud? Just in the light, tell me what is and what it will be. Don't make it up, that's something we don't need. Out on a limb, take just one chance. Don't mess it up, or we'll have to end this road. I've got left out of you.
Wow. So can they tell us the truth so we know what to expect out of them?
Right. Yeah. I guess that song kind of speaks for itself. But yeah, in that, well, there's some time-specific things there. There was like a rock star at the podium. People cheer them on, "Run, Rudy, run," meaning Rudy from New York. But, yeah, basically I think it, the sentiment certainly was for me and a lot of people is that, gee, if we could just count on our elected officials and soon-to-be elected officials just to shoot straight and be truthful with us, can't we at least start there? You know, wouldn't that be a good starting point that actually what they say is what they mean, or what they say is truthful? You know, I hear so much of that anymore. We are the unfortunate recipients of the leadership of one Kwame Kilpatrick, the mayor here, and he was ousted out of here criminally. Actually, he's in jail right now. And I mean, my gosh, how did? Of course, the joke is, how did you know when Kwame was lying? He was talking.
Oh, wow, that's something. Yeah, you know, I don't know why liars get into politics.
I don't either, but it sure seems there's plenty of them.
You know,
and there's plenty to go around. By the way, to be honest and fair, there's plenty to go around on both sides of that aisle, sadly. But I am hopeful, personally hopeful, that that finally the American public is really getting engaged right now. And I think that they're going to hold our politicians in the future their feet to the fire like we should have been doing all along. And I certainly hope and pray for some kind of change that benefits all Americans, not just certain select groups, but everyone. I think that's always been the beauty, as you would know from being from Cuba and a lot of people who came here from other countries. I run into people all the time in my work that have lived in other countries, from Poland and you know, Middle Easterners and other people who are just love this country and they've been here this long and they think this is the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know, they can go out and start their own business and make enough money for their families and support themselves and, you know, do a whole host of things that they could never do in other countries. And but for those of us, I suppose, who are born and raised here, we may have lost sight of that. You know, we may have lost our appreciation about what a wonderful thing it is to be an American in its purest form, not in the current day form where we've been headed, but in its original intent that we've had for a long time. It's a wonderful place to be.
Not only Americans forget, but even some Cubans forget, because as a matter of fact, today I was talking to an older woman who moved here in her 30s, and she proceeded to we're having a conversation about free health care, free education, and she mentioned that yes, in Cuba they have, you know, they have free education, and anybody could become a doctor. I was just, you know, flabbergasted. I thought, have you forgotten that only a select few? Now, if you become, you know, if you're a communist and if you believe like they believe, then you can be a doctor. But that doesn't take away from the fact that you make less than $10 a month, and it doesn't take away from the fact that you are sent anywhere they want to send you in the world, and you can't just escape because your family's held hostage. Your family's not allowed to go and travel with you. And why is it that only the people in the government can have vehicles? This is what we see in a society where the government gives you everything, then you give them essentially your freedom.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
It is so sad whenever I hear people say, but you have free health care, but you have free this, and you have free that. Nothing is for free. Somebody has to pay for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, of course, we're certainly learning that reality, and which we should have realized in advance that these perks or entitlements that we've had for many, many years indeed do cost a lot, and some of them are certainly have served a lot of Americans well, I suppose, but I think that we're starting to realize some of the negative downside of that too.
You know, I think a lot of times I see and I feel my son doesn't have health care because he's old, too old for him to be under our family health care. And he doesn't have health care through his work, and he can't afford to get health care. And he's going through the hoops, and he has been ill the last few months. He had a pneumonia, and you know, we were to the point that, the family is like, you go and we deal with it however we can. You know, we'll help you out, pay it out of pocket, however we can do this. But, you know, even still, we don't believe in this health care that is coming up. It's just people don't realize it. It is going to hurt everybody all the way around. If it is anything like what they have in Cuba, and any time that you have the government taking over any kind of whatever it is, you see, I mean, you go into any government agency and you have to sit there and you wait for, and the red tape and the paperwork and everything, government is not in the business of being efficient. The more money you throw into it, the more they waste. And I much rather see them give us the power and the incentive. There's been a lot of doctors coming out and saying, you know, we have ways that we can fix this, and the government really does not want to listen to them. I suggest that if you're interested in listening to some of these debates and some of these ideas, I have an awesome friend, Kenneth Darrell Brown, who also does Block Talk Radio, and he has interviewed amazing doctors. In fact, I'm going to look for him, look for his shows on this very same issue of healthcare. And there are some amazing brains out there thinking, putting all this together and saying, this is how we can work it out. But the government has shut out every idea, and they don't even want to listen to them. These doctors have come on radio shows and said, this is what we're doing in our town, this is what we're doing in our state, and they're doing things to help society, and they really are coming up with innovative and amazing programs, but the government is not supporting them and doesn't want to have anything to do with it. So that might be something for people to be aware, just to be aware. I mean, you can listen to the shows and then make your own mind about it. But I think before you vote into something, you know, and I think a lot of the politicians, they voted a lot of these stuff. They don't even have time to read it. And then when they come to realize what it is that we have been signing, exactly, who's going to pay for all of this stuff? If
right.
they really look right. at it, I mean, how many tax dollars do they have to take out of everybody's paycheck? And that means that your kids are not going to be able to, my kids' kids are not going to be able to go to college. And, you know, sometimes we think that we can get away with it and that, you know, yes, it's wonderful. It's working in France, or it's working in Italy, or it's working in, and a lot of people come to the United States because we really have the best healthcare in the world, and there's a lot of abuse.
One thing worth noting from our vantage point here, Marta, is that we're, I think, the only place in the United States where you can actually drive south to get into Canada. But if you are in Detroit, the bridge that goes over to Canada and the tunnel both go southbound to get over there, just the way the state is shaped. But in any case, I mention that because Canada obviously has their own health care system, and it's fraught with problems, and a lot of people that are in Canada can't get doctor's appointments or surgeries and the like for not weeks but months, and many of them end up in the very excellent healthcare system that we have here in Detroit. So, you know, they'll just drive across the bridge. And can you blame them? You know, you can't blame them. We really have excellent health care right here. And, of course, that's due in large part to the fact that we've been this auto community that we have been for so long that has supported such good health care, mm-hmm. too, and the demand for it. So, but, yeah, just right across the river for us, you have people complaining about it all the time and coming over here and taking advantage of what we have.
Pretty amazing. I have read horror stories about people who have died because in some of those countries that are not, they're not able to get in to get a doctor's appointment for months and months, like you said, and they've died of just really minor infections. And, you know, I can call the doctor and I can get an appointment pretty much any time. And if I tell them it's an emergency, I really need to see them, it's probably the same day or the next day. So that's something that a lot of people don't realize. Sometimes, and the medicine, you can get your medicine pretty much, you know, if you're covered, and if you're not covered, then you pay it out of pocket. But it's, the stuff is there, and it isn't the best. We definitely need to work at doing something to make it better and to make it more affordable. And I think that no one is saying that we have it, you know, that it's perfect and it needs to stay the way it is. We know that it needs to be fixed, but I think that what they're trying to do is really going about it the wrong way. And some of us who have experienced it firsthand from living in socialist or communist countries or countries where they have socialized medicine, we see the big ills of it, and it's really scary. All you have to do is look at the teeth of a lot of these people that come from some of these countries. Check out their teeth.
Right, and, interesting.
You know, that'll tell you a lot. It's mm-hmm. really sad that you just can't get into the dentist easily, and, you know, simple hygiene, simple thing, you know, x-rays, those things that we, you know, I took my son and my daughter to the dentist when they were 3 and 4. A lot of people in other countries don't see a dentist until they have issues with their teeth in their 30s or 40s. By then, they have gum disease and they have everything else. So just, you know, really think about what you're voting for and be really well acquainted with the issues. And we're not saying do it this way or do it that way. Do it the way that your heart dictates, but make sure that you know the facts. So my goodness, again, you and I get on these conversations, we get deep. Steve.
I like Bob's comment there.
Yeah, what is Bob saying?
Son's been to the dentist since his first tooth always came with us. So that's great. I like that, Bob.
If
your guests aren't in the chat room, they should be. There's a lot of fun going on there.
I know. There's a lot of people that don't come to the chat room, and I think they should, because they can really see the interaction. No use resenting. Oh, you know, that's the other thing, is that a lot of people resent the rich. We were at the state fair in Minnesota this fall, just last month, and there was a booth. They were passing out these buttons that said, "Tax the rich." And this woman, this older woman, was handing me a button, you know, with a smile on her face. And I looked at her and I said, "No, thank you." Now, I am not rich by any means. I'm not even close to being rich, you know. But I don't want the rich to be taxed any more than, you know. Why don't they just do like a flat tax, like a 10%? We've talked about that forever, 10, whatever you think that is deemed, reasonable.
Right.
So that everybody would be taxed according to, you know, because – let me say, if I'm working my butt off to do this radio show, and at some point in my life I become successful and I become a millionaire, should I be punished because I was, you know, busted my butt and did all this research and, you know, chose to do what I'm doing, and now I'm making millions and now I have to get back half?
Well, I always look at that. I really like that observation, because I always look at it this way, at least in most cases, and I'm watching some of Bob's comments and picking up on his sentiments, and I'm sure that he might see this as a bit of a different angle. But what I would say is that you wouldn't have possibly got to that point, I suppose, of making millions if there weren't a lot of people that benefited financially along the way. It's impossible in most cases. I run a business. I've run it for 33 years now, and I've hired many, many, many people whose families have been supported, and who, you know, people who've got through college or whatever. And if I hadn't taken the initiative and the risk, by the way, of being an independent business person and starting that business and risking mm-hmm. everything I had to do it, then I probably would not have created the opportunities for employment that I did. And yet, that's exactly what happened. You know, so I've done well enough in my business, and I'm very thankful that I have, but it didn't come without sacrifice and risk, and it also absolutely benefited a whole host of people, too.
And you're right about that, because I don't have the money to hire people, I have to do all of the work myself, and we all see in my family how that is definitely affecting our relationship. There's a lot of times that we don't have a lot of time together because I, you know, there's a lot of marketing involved, and there's a lot of phone calls, and you know, and there's so much to do that at some point you don't trust. You can't just give the stuff to people to do it, you know, if you're not paying them, because they're not going to take it seriously. It isn't their business. So you want to make sure that people are treated with respect and people are treated fairly and people are, you know, and you know how you want to run things. So until you get to a point where you're making some money that you can hire people that are, not professionals, but people who know what they're doing, you know, who are skilled in what it is that you need, until you have that kind of income coming in, there's a lot. I always liken it to like somebody who's just opening up a restaurant. They always say that people who have restaurants, they have to work, you know, like almost 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. And basically that's
true
with any business. You know, this is what we're doing, and we're very, very proud of what we do, and we want to do it well. So, yeah, I don't want to see, you know, I don't want the government telling me what I can do and cannot do and taking all my money away once I make it. And, you know, the other part is that I am generous, as many people who have a lot of money, who make a lot of money, they're generous, and they do give back to the community. A lot of times people who don't have a lot of money say things like, oh, yeah, but, you know, $50,000 is just like a drop in the bucket for so-and-so. But it is their money, and if they give it away freely, and it, you know, does it matter, you know? You know what I'm going with this. It's just the ending thing. I think that the government sometimes what they like to do is divide and conquer, and once you divide the poor from the haves, from the have-nots, then you have succeeded. And I like to think of myself as, yes, I am not rich. I'm not anywhere close to being rich. But you know what? I don't feel like I am a poor person either. I have never felt, even when I was in Cuba without food and without clothes, I never felt like I was poor. I think that feeling poor is a condition of the soul, a condition of the spirit. And I would suggest anyone who feels like they don't have material, whatever it is, in order to feel like they're rich, I say look within yourself and look at your own capabilities, because everyone is capable of having more than you have right now.
Mm-hmm.
And,
well put.
And it isn't all about material things either.
Can I answer a question real quick for Caroline, who's been so...
Yes.
Patient there in the chat room. She has asked a number of times if I have ever written a love song, and because, you know, she's heard all of this stuff we've been playing here that's more politically minded, religious, social, whatever. But yes, Caroline, I have a song on the first CD Am I Here Already? I hope you'll look it up, and I'll post it real quick. It is song number 8, and the song is called Eighth Day of June. And the 8th day of June happens to be the anniversary for me and my wife, and we've been married for 36 years and have 4 wonderful daughters, and it's very much a love song, and I hope you'll look it up.
Great. I'm so glad that you caught her question, because I never did see it, even after I was looking. I just want to say briefly that, okay, here's Wolf had mentioned earlier, there is, let's see, where is it, Wolf? We want people to go to, where is it, Wolf? Post it for me really quick here. We have a friend in common, Jana Mashoni is the artist, and she was the very first female artist who was on Cubanorama. Is let's see, Bob, maybe you can post it if she's not around. I'm going up, but I can't see it. Do you see the comment about Jana Mashoni is getting nominated? I think it's either for her song. I know I went into that one website.
I think I saw it earlier. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and I we want our friends to go and listen to the CDs that are posted on this site, and please vote for Jana. Okay, I don't see it right now, but before the show, we have just a few minutes before the show, so I don't know where Wolf is. Let me see if I can go find it. In the meantime, why don't you oh, here it is. Actually, you know what? For people who are listening to the show, if you go to Cubanorama fan page on Facebook, I posted it there. What do you call that? That they're having us vote on, Cubanorama. It's a the NAMIs. I don't know. I don't think it's the NAMIs. I should have known. I can't find it right now. Did she write it in yet or not?
Yeah, Bob just put it up. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Bob. It is the. See if I can write. Okay, it's the Aboriginal People's Choice.com Awards. And I am going to, you know what, go ahead. I think tomorrow is the last day for voting. And the name is Jana Mashoni. And look her up on, I believe it's the Best CD or something like that. But anyway, you will find her name, Jana Mashoni, and you will see why she is the best. Go ahead and vote for her. And with that, I think that, how about if we remind our friends, what you got going this weekend in Miami? And where?
Well, I'm going to be down at Miami-Dade College at the Tower Theater, where Augustin Blasquez's documentary, Shay, The Other Side of an Icon, will be debuting. And it's there Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then on Monday, you'll have to look that one up. I'm not sure where there'll be a screening on that day, somewhere on the college as well, but I don't think that day's at the Tower. I'm not entirely sure. But anyway, I'll be there because my video and music video and song, You Don't Know Shay, is a part of that documentary. And I encourage everybody to pick that DVD up, or the documentary up. I think it's at CubaCollectibles.com. Boy, I wish I had it. You know, I'll try to find that real quick before we get off the air, so I can make sure that you have it to post as well. But if you Google Augustin Blasquez, Blasquez, or is it Z? Blazquez, and you will easily find him that way. And he has a number of documentaries, and this is just his most recent.
Yes, it's Blasquez with a Z both times. And I believe that on Monday, the 18th, you are going to be at premiere is at the Mansion d'Amérique Latine in Paris, France.
Right, exactly.
I just have to laugh.
Shucks, I won't be there. I wish I could.
Okay, well, that's where the documentary will be shown, and that event is sponsored by Zoe Valdez and Ricardo Vegas. So that one is at 9 p.m. In Miami. So if you're up in Miami, it's nice and warm. It's still, you know, Minnesota is getting cold right now. We have 64 degrees. And also, let's see, next year, so people can jot this down, and then we're going to go to our last song of the evening. We got like 4 minutes left. Next year, I believe it was January 28th, if my mind doesn't fail me. What's going on? Do you remember?
January 28th, yep. A song that you played last night, Look Away, you played that first as a part of a documentary by Keith Feamy called Our yes. Vietnam Generation, and it's a tribute to Vietnam veterans here in Michigan. But of course, his hope is that once that documentary comes out at the Fox Theater in Detroit, that it will be picked up nationally. So I hope that others will hear that after January 28th.
Oh, awesome. So, you know, we're going to go ahead and the last song of the evening is Somewhere.
March of a Progressive.
Do you want us to play? Which one do you want us to play?
You know, I'll leave that up to you. We didn't visit March of the Progressive. That is a video on YouTube. You can look up. That's my most recent one, and that's certainly a, kind of an election piece, if you will, cultural, et cetera. But you choose. I'll leave it up to you.
You know, we played Faith last time. Why don't we go ahead and play March of the Progressive? And if they don't close the microphones for us, then we'll go ahead and play Faith, and after that, so
terrific.
Friends can hear it. But if you want to hear Faith, it's at the end of last Sunday's show. And so don't forget, Look Away is the name of the song that we played last time, and that one is the documentary that's coming up on the 28th of January. And where are you going to be? We're at Detroit Fox Theater, right?
Fox Theater, yep.
Okay, so that's and it's, this information is somewhere in a website where friends can go to?
OurVietnamGeneration.com.
There you go. Okay. We got to make sure we have those up. Okay. Well, what can I say? I cannot believe you and I were able to talk 4 hours.
A long time, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really appreciate your allowing me on the show for that long, Marty. It was so nice of you to bring me on and play my music, and I just thank you very much. I love you for it.
You're welcome. I love you, too. And we got they're telling me in my ear 2 minutes, so we're going to leave you guys with March of the Progressive, and be informed about everything that you do in life. Don't go at it blindly, including love. And guess what? I love you guys. Have a wonderful evening. And if we find John, and when we find John, there's Cindo. He's on the hot trail now. I love you guys. What can I say? I'll be back tomorrow with Sunny Ahuya. Have a wonderful evening. Thank you, Steve, for coming on the show. Love you guys in the chat room, everybody.
Thank you, Marta. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. Good evening, everybody.
An illusion. What they don't know has led to our
someone know it. Make them understand the sacrifice they made. Somewhere in another town is a hill on holy ground, and a tree is raised so tall, so a man could fall, a man could fall, a could fall. Somewhere someone looked up at him, a mother's son, and tears did fill her eyes, so she cried, so she cried, she cried. Remember me when you're gone, to prepare a place by you, if you please, if you please. looking out from a window, California shoreline. They wave in a sign, welcome home. A song in the sand, have drawn a straight line. They dare me to cross. They don't see what I've seen. They haven't been where I've been. They cannot feel what I feel. I look, they look away. Watch the young man. We'll be right back. tell you to.